Good morning. Over the next 30 to 40 minutes, we're going to be trying to reverse engineer how one brand whose image is spiraling out of control has gone on the attack, and how a couple of comments from influencers boosted the fortunes of one firm, but only after the comms manager stepped in. Plus, we've got the podcast community bag, as well as a campaign to talk about that our guest is currently working on. And in our AI for PR section, we'll be looking at a couple of new developments. They're specifically focused on communication uses as well. I'm going to be discussing all this and more with the amazing Adam Weeks from Cirrus Influence. So whether you're on the train, jogging around the park, doing the dishes, or just flopping on the bed after a hard day at work. And yes, people listening to this show right now have told me they do all that. Welcome to the Public Relations Podcast.
The Public Relations Podcast with Richard Ninson.
Well, I hope you're having a very good week. Black Friday, of course, coming up fairly soon, isn't it? And the holiday season as well. So I'm sure you have plenty of work on at the moment and plenty of other campaigns going on as well. But we are back. It is season six, a totally new format for the Public Relations Podcast. And I'm really excited to be getting this underway. Thank you so much for all your ideas in the past as well, which really helped me form this format. The key thing for me, though, is I want to make a show that is useful to you now. You know, I hope that what you're going to get over the next few minutes are going to be some ideas, some inspiration, or perhaps more likely some thoughts that provoke other thoughts in your mind that help you over the week ahead. And if it's not doing that, then I want you to tell me how to improve this show. You know, I'm not precious about this. We have this new format, but it can, of course, always evolve. So I want your ideas. And one of the things that I also realized with the previous old format was that it started to generate this conversation amongst frontline PR workers. And I want to keep that conversation going. You know, I've got this perspective based on my experiences as a news editor. I was a YouTuber for a while with a niche aviation show. I did PR in European politics, and I was a partner in a small PR firm doing online content as well. But you have yours. And it's together that we can create something which is much more rounded and comprehensive that hopefully will help us all. So I want your ideas in the show by sending your thoughts, comments, and campaign updates to me. And yes, of course, I'll give you a plug for that. And also by coming on the show as well as guest host too. To get some of this conversation started, I'm going to be asking you your opinion a few times in this episode. Sometimes you'll be able to answer with a simple click on a poll. I will send you to a URL in a second. Other times by reaching out to me. Now, if you do want to get that set up now, then whether you're using a mobile phone or a computer, open up a new browser window and head to thepublicrelationspodcast.com/poll. So my guest co-host this week is Adam Weeks from Cirrus Influence. A very good morning to you. You're joining me for the very first episode of this new series. Thank you so much, Adam.
It is absolutely my honor. I've been hearing about this new episode for quite some time, and to be your first person on this new season, it's an honor.
There's no pressure, obviously.
No pressure. I've come to perform.
How are you doing anyway? I mean, I know obviously you're busy with PR, but haven't you got a drone? Aren't you a massive drone?
Yes, I do like to fly drones from time to time. I got a nice little DJI drone. I'll do some of those the drones where you have a goggles, and those are always kind of fun.
And they've
been out of commission for a while. Finally got those up and running, and it's just kind of fun to zip around your room, these little mini quads. They're kind of fun.
Wow. And so that's the ones where you got the first person. Did you get airsick?
Absolutely. When first start. It gets better, though. It does get better. And I taught drone piloting for a while, actually.
Right.
As a teacher, I would teach drone piloting, and it was a really neat experience where I had about six high school kids. They all had these goggles on, and they were flying these little drones around the gym, and we were racing it around. It was a lot of fun, but yes.
I can just imagine my stomach would be absolutely churned. But anyway, let's talk about PR, shall we? Let's get started.
Absolutely.
Let's start, first of all, then, with things that we spotted this week. There's a few different stories in here. First of all, according to a survey of content creators, 76% of content creators are afraid of talking about green issues. They fear being labeled for greenwashing, so in other words, virtue signaling, and are being cancelled for not being a perfect green. If they're worried, should PRs and their organizations be worried too? I mean, the first thought I had when I read this story is I remember traveling with a group of environmentalists many years ago on a story when I was a journalist. And they went from London to the UK over to quite a long way in France. And there were about five or six of us packed in this one car. And all they said the whole way along was we wish we could have flown. And which kind of sums up the problem. You know, can you win this? I mean, what's your thought on this, Adam? Do you think people have got to be careful?
So they do need to be careful. And it goes back to being authentic. If you're not authentic about really being green, if you're being green because someone told you you should be green, then you aren't green.
Yeah.
Do you care about it? And what I would say is that just like with so many things in life, it's not an analog. Either I love the environment or I hate the environment. I want to, you know, the biggest diesel trucks, or I'm going to ride a bike everywhere. That's not what we're asking people to do. If you can use the communication around the environment to help your, to help how people think about you because you truly do care about it, then that's a positive.
One of the problems for me is that, and with the kind of, whether you're talking about the sort of social identity, whether you're talking about green issues and things like that, is the problem is there is no definition of what is perfect. So if you try to label yourself as green, there will always be someone who will say, you didn't do this, or you didn't do that, or you didn't do that.
So greener.
As much as we try to be green, as much as we try to do it, it's actually kind of a no-win situation. So it's like, the feeling I kind of have with this is that you shouldn't try and say, look, I am green, because you're going to get criticized. It's far better to say we are always working towards green. We're doing this bit, we're doing this bit, we're doing this bit, but we can always improve. And by taking that more reined in focus, you're not going to open yourself up for attack as much. What do you think?
Do green things and tell people about the green things you have done. And we're always on a goal to increase our, you know, to be better, but we're never there.
But how would you advise someone if they are worried about, or if they're thinking about, you know, your particular thing is in the tech space, isn't it? But it's, if you've got a company who are, I don't know, you think of the environmental things, and there's a lot of questions about data centers, isn't there? And about the amount of energy they use and stuff like that. But what sort of approach would you take if someone was going, well, look, how green should we be? In quotes.
Right. Well, there are some hosting companies that take that very seriously, and we are a green host and we're carbon neutral as much as you possibly can be, and all of that. I think that it's difficult to build a business around that unless it truly is your business.
Yeah.
My encouragement is don't fake it. You know, be authentic, but at the end of the day, do your best. I think you should be more green. I think we should all be more green. I have room for improvement in there as well.
Yeah. Let's move on. Next story is one that you spotted about Apple, isn't it? Tell us that one.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. One of the reasons why I've been flying my drone more is that my old phone was struggling with flying the drone. So I got the fancy new iPhone 15. And with that, all the research and going down the rabbit hole of the different agencies, you know, media outlets that are covering this new iPhone that Apple does every year. And this year, guess what? It's better if you weren't, because that's what Apple has to say. But what happens when fairly quickly some of these big YouTube channels get in and the guy comes and he breaks the back and the screen pops the back? And so that's been one of the ones that has come out. One that Apple has actually responded to is in the new iPhone 15 Pro Max and Pro. There have been more discussions around this thing overheating. And the question is, oh, is it because it's new and it's updating all the time? Or is this really a problem with software? And yeah, what does Apple do? This is their baby. This is the thing that they make more money than any other part of their business. And
it's knocking away at their brand. You know, I was thinking about this when you told me you wanted to do this story. And it's like, you know, Apple has always created this brand, which is about innovation. It's like we've got the next step, which is mind blowing, which is beyond everyone else. We can perform miracles almost. Whereas you look at like Android or some of the other sort of minor platforms, they've kind of gone, look, we're just iterating. So the problem Apple have kind of done is they've almost set their standards too high publicly, so that when they don't achieve miracles, they appear to have failed, whereas others have just made slight progressions. No one's particularly interested. And it feels to me that that's one of the problems they've got with the brand almost now.
Well, and it's fairly common for Apple stock to go up on the rumors and then to crash on the news.
Right.
Because, you know, for whatever reason, but it's never as good as it's going to, this year it's going to make toast, you know, or whatever, you know, exciting thing that the new Apple device is going to be. Apple has set themselves up for intense scrutiny. And every YouTuber out there is looking for that big story that when they drop it, the thing shatters on the first one, because they're going to get tons of views on that.
So do you think they've got to rein that perception back in? I mean, I don't know how you can, really, because once you've built a brand for so long on this.
At the end of the day, if I watch a YouTube video where someone took the iPhone Pro and they really pushed on it and it broke, and it broke the back glass on the device, am I not going to buy it?
Yeah.
Well, I did buy it.
Yeah.
So I think that does it truly impact their sales, and they're doing okay.
So this comes back to the whole thing of knowing your core market, isn't it? It's that, you know, it's a bit like, you know, the whole Balenciaga saga earlier this year with the fashion brand. And there was this whole question of, well, now there's all this criticism of the way they did their advertising. Are they going to lose all their customers? Well, their loyal fan base haven't gone away. Everyone else is criticizing them, but the loyal fan base is staying with them. And it kind of feels a little bit like that. You know, you've got your Apple loyalists, haven't you? And as long as they reach out to those people and keep them on side, they're going to be okay, I guess.
Well, and it's also your Apple critics. No matter what Apple does, there's going to be a loyal anti-fan base that thinks that whatever Apple does is stupid and terrible.
But they're not going to buy it, are they?
They're not going to buy it.
Yeah.
And that goes with so many different brands out there. And I think one of the interesting parts is, how do you build a brand that has intense loyalty? And that's Apple's done that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge conversation in itself. Let's move on to another quick one that we spotted, the public divorce between the singer Joe Jonas and actress Sophie Turner, if you're not familiar with them. It kind of highlights a little bit of these sort of changing trends in PR and audience trust, because Jonas's PR team apparently tried to shape public opinion through the tabloids with leaked stories from sources close to that we've obviously heard as a way of doing stories for years, while Turner responded with a detailed legal petition, the case raising the sort of kind of questions about public skepticism towards anonymous sources from a PR point of view. You know, certainly when I was a journalist, we got plenty of stories that used to come in from sources close to, and we knew full well what that meant. I mean, it literally meant from the source. Just they were trying to sort of move themselves away from it. But I think there are, at times, leaks can be useful. They're a way, particularly like in politics, to test out ideas, to see how people react. But with politics, or in the case of Joe Jonas and all that, is you've got people here looking to criticize. But then you get, and this is why I thought it was interesting for you as well, Adam, is that when it comes to like computer games, this is a standard thing. They're leaking for 6 months, a year before a game comes out, clearly from the company themselves. But because fans want to play it and they get excited about the leaks, they actually almost enjoy the leaks because it allows YouTubers to create content and discuss it and all this kind of thing. So it kind of feels like leaks are... can backfire if people want to criticize you, but if they enjoy the leaks, you're okay. That was my thought. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that leaks can, there's a whole industry about leaks, and these outlets need something to talk about. And part of the fun is speculating which leaks are true and which leaks are not. Where is the truth in there? And there's the anticipation of that thing coming out. And that's the hard part for a company, is how do they influence leaks in a positive way, to put them in a positive light?
I mean, do you see much leaking in the tech industry? You're closer to it than Apple, I am. I mean,
Apple is definitely, that's a big one. Google, the Google Pixel is coming out. So that's Apple's big competitor, Samsung. So yes, there are definitely leaks, and people make an entire living off of just trying to find the leaks. I think an interesting one is Tesla and people flying drones over the Tesla factory to see when the Cybertruck is coming out and if there's Cybertruck spottings. And you can't really keep people from flying a drone over your factory. So you also see pictures where there's a drone flying over and the people are just kind of waving, because what are you going to do?
But also, it's kind of an opportunity, isn't it? It's like you can deny it. You can actually, well, I mean, if I was thinking like Tesla, then you could park the truck out in the garage, in the yard, maybe slightly disguise it, and you know it's going to generate content.
You doth protest too much can be the problem.
Yeah, exactly that. It's actually a big opportunity, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I was actually going to do a poll for everyone watching this now to see whether you've ever been involved in any kind of strategic linking, but I know that no one's going to want to admit to it. But if you have got any thoughts on this one, I would love to know. So feel free to reach out. I will let you know more ways a little bit later on, because I'd love to know ways that you think it is a positive way of doing leaks and when it can backfire as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on to the part of the show where we do our best to try and break down and reverse engineer a couple of PR moments or campaigns from the past week or two and see what techniques we can pull out of them that maybe we can all pick something from. Plus, I'll also be asking your perspective as well. And we start with this one. It took one click, one viral moment, and the corporate giant was set in motion. It's December the 20th, 2022. And Alexis Frost, a TikTok foodie, TikToker foodie, I think I'm saying that right, introduces the world to the Chipotle quesadilla, unlike any other, loaded with steak, extra cheese, and fajita veggies. The very next day, influencer Keith Hill adds a twist, a side of Chipotle honey vinaigrette mixed with sour cream. Now I'm getting hungry. The TikTok community just ignites. Hundreds try this dish, or try to, but as the dish gains fame, Roblox start to appear. Chipotle outlets post signs up saying protein and cheese only on quesadillas. No TikTok trends allowed here, which leads to discontent. But then the comms pro steps in the form of Candice Beck, Chipotle's director of social influencer and Web3. Publicly, people hear rumblings that Chipotle is listening and exploring possibilities. It takes a while, but by March the 2nd this year, the fajita quesadilla is not just possible, it's on the digital menu across the firm's chains to the delight of customers and influencers. The impact of this, Chipotle's quesadilla sales nearly double, digital sales soar, and their rewards program sees a 37% uptick in a week. And Candice Beck is named as one of Ad Age's 40 under 40 recently, and all kinds of other awards. So how do we reverse engineer this? What can we pull out of this? I think my first things, Adam, is that they listened to what people were saying, rather than trying to stick to a brand message or a marketing campaign that they wanted to put out. They saw the noise that was growing. There was a conversation that they could address, admittedly with some action. They had to retrain staff. They had to get more product in their stores. They clearly had a bit of an internal battle. You know, the cost of informing staff, getting the product going, getting the marketing team, getting everyone behind it, getting that all together. But in a way, I think the fact that it dragged out actually helped to build tension as well. What do you take out of it? What do you take the techniques from that one as to how that worked? We reverse engineer that.
I think the principle that I follow, that I see mirrored in this, is stay curious. Mm. And stay curious about your competitors, about your audience, about your customers. What are they thinking about? What are they doing? It can be fairly easy to put our heads down and do business. Do the thing that we planned this out for the next 3 years. And so here's our plan, and this is what we're going to do. Sure, you can do that. And that might work fine for you. You're a professional. You've done this before. Are you missing that viral moment of being curious about, hey, there's something happening here, and it can either hurt us or it can help us. Let's find a way for it to help us.
I think a lot of companies, as you say, are so stuck on their current marketing plan. You know, I think about the politics when I was doing political PR. And in politics, you are riding the wave of what people are saying every day. Well, every hour, frankly, every minute. So in a way, political PR is almost permanent crisis PR. Whereas a lot of firms see these things as a 3 month, 6 month campaign. And so having that ability to react when an opportunity like this comes up is something that I think actually PR firms have got to try and instill into a client that they're working with or with their own organization and say, look, we need to be ready to be flexible. We've got to watch out for these. And we've got to actually have a crisis management team in place ready for these opportunities. It may not be a problem for us. It may be an opportunity, but we still need to treat it in the same way. We need to move fast.
And I would say every crisis has an opportunity to have a benefit for you. There, you can come out smelling like roses if you handle a crisis appropriately. You could, that's often one of the biggest opportunities is when you do something wrong, what do you do to make it right? Obviously, Chipotle wasn't doing something wrong. I would be curious, though, what if they had had another campaign ready to go and they're just getting ready to launch it and then put the brakes on? Hey, we've got an opportunity. How much fun would it be in that room when they decided to shift gears and say, hey, we're going to do it this way instead because we need to hop on this now?
I wonder, with a company that big, you've probably got the ability to be run. Well, you are. You're going to be running multiple campaigns, aren't you? So it's it feels to me like it's about getting the resources that you need to be able to react to that situation. If you're doing a small in-house team, or if you're running a small charity PR team or something like that, then you probably have literally got that one person who is trying to focus on a one campaign. And they're going to have to say, well, look, what am I going to get the most benefit from? Am I going to get it from this one that we've been planning for 3 months? Or do we delay it? Or am I going to get more benefit from this viral moment that we could jump on? I think that's the hard decision, isn't it?
Well, and it's the courage to do so. Who is it that brought it up to the decision maker or the decision makers? Who was it that said, hey guys, I know that you people who are maybe way above my pay grade have already committed to this, but I'm going to pitch you something here because I think there's an opportunity. That takes significant courage.
Yeah. I think also it's pre-preparing people. Do you think? You know, if you're starting, you know, if you're going in as a new PR into a firm, then it's kind of saying, look, this is how I want to approach PR. We need to get in place from the start an ability to react to these stories. So by setting a bit of the, you're actually saying, look, we're going to be doing this from the start, rather than bringing it up when a viral moment hits. And that's part of the problem, I think, perhaps with Chipotle here, and why it took so long, is because they had to get wheels moving.
Right. And that's one of the things when we tell our clients is that, you know, in our onboarding process, we're typically dealing with your C-level people. We're all having this big moment on what this means. But our weekly syncs, they're going to be with an integrator of some sort. You know, we don't get the C-level person weekly in those meetings. But I need to make sure that I am clear with the C-level is that there may be times where I need quick decision-making.
Yeah.
Make sure that the integrator is empowered to at least make this level of decisions right away and be ready to amp them up. Now, if everything's just kind of going normal, we won't bother you with that, but be ready for that moment because if you miss it, and I would argue that Chipotle almost did.
Yeah,
they almost took a little, wow, how much time? If they'd waited 4 months, forget it. But, you know, it was enough time, the right amount of time that they were still able to make, you know, a win out of this one.
The funny thing is, I think actually the fact it took so long actually worked a bit in their favor because it built the tension more.
Yeah.
You know, and when it started to reach that peak of like, you're not doing it, then they started to release these kind of rumblings, these little comments that maybe we're working on something. And that helped to keep the narrative going. Yeah. And I wonder in a way if those influencers had done it that day and Chipotle had said, yeah, no problem, we'll do it tomorrow, the story would have died. So in a funny, I mean, who has the courage to kind of drag it out like that? I don't know, but I think it actually worked.
Yeah, I mean, it may have just been authentic is that they were wrestling with it and that's just how it happened. But yeah, the anticipation, but the people running the social media had to be clever enough to keep it going. And I think my hat's off to them for continuing that story.
Yeah. Well, let me ask a question to everyone. I mean, do you find your clients or organization reluctant to jump on PR moments and the opportunities that arise suddenly? I have put a poll, as I say, on the website at thepublicrelationspodcast.com/poll. So if you go there and you can click on the answer straight away. But it is quite a simplistic question. So if you have more thoughts on this, like Adam and I have just been talking about, the page will also show you how to get in touch, and then I will give the results of the poll and any other views and comments and opinions and suggestions in a future episode in the community bag, which we've got coming up a little bit later on. Still to come, AI tools for PRs this week, the community bag, and Adam's own campaign. But let's move on to the second item we're going to cover this week. And this one's a tough one. In May, the winds started maybe to shift. Linda Yaccarino, a revered figure in the ad world, took center stage at a social media giant that you've probably heard of, one formerly called Twitter, now known as X. Her mission was as clear as it was challenging: rehabilitate a brand which was damaged due to advertiser abandonment, a narrative of fears over free speech versus hate speech, and an owner with a reputation for dividing opinion, whether you agree with him or not. From a commercial point of view, the platform was in freefall, and something had to give. Enter Yaccarino. She immediately started working behind the scenes to build new relationships with advertisers, and just as much in public to rebuild trust, going on business programs and speaking at advertiser events. Her job was to become the new face of X and to reinforce a different message. The narrative, though, of course, was a challenge. She needed to reach advertisers who were afraid of being associated, as often they are, with a brand which has currently got a negative zeitgeist around it. If she'd stayed silent, things were not going to improve. So she had to speak up. And I just love this sort of scenario because it's like it's almost as bad as it can get. And you can't help but think to yourself, okay, well, how could you fix it if that was your job? So whatever your thoughts about X, as usual, this show is not about politics. It's not about anything like that. It's all about the PR strategy. So what I mean is, if you were in that position, if you were in Yaccarino's position, if it was your job, how would you sort this out? Hopefully most of us are never going to be in quite this situation, but it is just such a fascinating scenario to have a look at. I think for me, when you look at what she's done, there's an awful lot that's happened over the past few weeks and the past couple of months since she came in. Yaccarino really used her background and her influence in the advertising world to specifically target and reassure the advertising industry. You know, so much of PR these days is not about going, there's one audience. It's about going, who is the specific people you are trying to reach? So the key stakeholders with the advertising industry. She's been trying to address the accusations head on by not trying to fudge it or avoid it, by saying, look, this is my view on it, and trying to come up with statistics that appear to argue that as well. And she's also accepted the fact that this is not going to get better if they don't do something. So she has come out kind of fighting. That's what I think my reverse engineer of this is. What are your takeaways from it, Adam? What do you think she's done right? What do you think she's done wrong?
This is really interesting. It's an interesting story. I didn't know much about Linda until you brought her to my attention. Mm-hmm. And to be fair to Linda, this video clip that I saw of her was just a small clip. And maybe there have been more leading up to it. The clip I saw of her being interviewed, she was pretty defensive. Mm-hmm. And there was a person who was kind of taking apart her body language and really just assessing how she seemed uncomfortable in the questions where I think Elon Musk had mentioned something about where Twitter may become a paid platform or content would be paid or different things like that. And you know that she is struggling to answer that question in a way that's not going to come back to bite her. At the same time, what I saw from Linda was pretty defensive and was fairly off-putting.
So do you think she's actually doing more damage than good by going out there and doing these interviews?
If the one section that I saw, I mean, I've seen a few things, but that one piece was not helpful. Yeah. From the piece I saw, again, this was a clip that someone sort of took apart, her body language and her responses. They kind of dissected that. And what I saw, I was like, oh, here is a lady who is feeling attacked and is showing it all over her face, and she's struggling.
I think, it's interesting. You saw that clip. I watched the CNBC interview that they did with her, and it was, not surprisingly, the narrative that's going on at the moment, it was extremely attacking, and she was obviously struggling with that. But she came up with a few lines in there which had clearly been practiced as well. I'm trying to remember, one of them was something like, No, it's completely gone from my head. See how memorable it was. But she came up with a few lines that did actually stick in my head, at least for a few minutes anyway. But it's just, I wonder with this one, is that the narrative seems to be getting worse the whole time. And I wonder if she had no option but to actually start trying to come back. And she knows she's going to get attacked. She knows she's going to have a tough time. But she's got to kind of chip her way back bit by bit. Or maybe she should have just stood back and waited for the fans of X to gradually rebuild the reputation.
I have not seen suddenly more people excited about X
and there's
Twitter
a problem, isn't that?
Because of what she's done. The proof is in that pudding. Maybe you might expect it to take longer, but I don't suddenly see, oh yeah, Twitter, they're making some moves. I'm really excited about their future. I think they're really onto something here. If that was her goal, I haven't seen it.
I think I think the main thing she's done is she's targeted the advertisers. I don't think she's so worried about the users at the moment. I think she's just gone because that's the core problem they've got as a brand at the moment is trying to get that advertiser revenue back in. So I don't know whether, you know, going on CNBC is not going to be a program which your average Twitter user who is, I don't know, talking about the weather or sports is going to be watching. So right. I think she's targeted that bit. But I just think it's a tough one. You know, it's a total hypothetical. You know, what would you do if you were in her position? Where would you even start from, do you think?
It's really difficult. I would think that the advertisers would want to see confidence in the brand going forward is that this still is the world's town hall. This is where we go for the conversations. This is the place when emergencies happen around the world. Where do you check? You check Twitter. When you want to find a product, you check Twitter, that or X. And apparently it's still not working on me. That I think would have been a stronger strategy than this defensive, let me be interviewed about Elon Musk's tweets and what he's saying. Because she's in a rock in a hard place, I probably wouldn't have gotten between those.
So you would have gone more for the get the users to start shouting on our behalf kind of thing, would you?
I think a confident stance of we're still where that's happening would have been a helpful place. If I am an advertising executive and I want to make sure, is it a safe place for me to promote my brands? And that's what the work I think they need to be doing rather than a town hall Q&A on gotcha questions.
I love this story because this is the kind of thing where there is no right answer. So this is what Adam and I are thinking. What do you think? I would love to know what you think. Go onto the website. I put a simple poll on there, thepublicrelationspodcast.com/poll. You will see the question there. And it literally says, let's say you had the brief that Linda has on day one, what would you have focused on first? But also, what other thoughts do you have? How do you think it could have been handled differently? What strategies would you and your organization have used if you were trying to deal with this? And not necessarily Twitter or X, but a brand that is in that situation where it's spiraling downwards. How would you have dealt with it? I would love to know your thoughts. It is, as I say, quite a simplistic question, so I would love to hear your other thoughts on that. Still to come, some AI updates for PRs, but first, let's chat a little bit more with Adam about a campaign that you're currently doing on Sirius Influence. And you're going to have to remind me exactly the one you were going to talk about, because it had a name which I couldn't quite remember. But just tell us a bit about what you're working on and some of the things that you're learning from that campaign this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a little bit about what we're doing is we work in a very small niche. If you're familiar with WordPress, it's actually where you and I met. We met at a WordCamp in Porto, Portugal.
Yes.
And that was all about WordPress, and 43% of the internet is built on WordPress. It's obviously a very important, influential platform.
Yeah.
And you have this interesting ecosystem, this community of people that care about the project and that are building products for people to build better websites. One of our clients, they are called Multicollab. There's a really neat product that they take this problem in WordPress that right now, if you want to build on WordPress, you go into the editor and only one person at a time can be editing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So a fairly common workflow is, hey, everybody, here's the Google Doc. Let's do co-editing.
Yeah, collaborative stuff. We're doing it all the time, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah. Suggesting, cloud, all that we're going to do in the Google Doc. Then one of the people on the team is going to copy and paste it into WordPress. And then there you go. Multicollab is trying to solve that with being able to do suggesting and editing right there in WordPress. So they call it kind of the Google Docs style collaboration in WordPress. They're getting ready to launch, and I have a couple of issues that I wanted to bring up and kind of get your feedback on them. Yeah. One is we had this PR plan, and we're trying to line it up with their final release. As software goes, it gets better and better, but there typically gets to be a place where, and now it's complete. Mm-hmm. Well, that complete was, the plan was about a month ago, and we had things lined up. We were going to have people checking out the software ahead of time. As with life, it got pushed back. This is a hard and difficult thing to solve. It's not an easy thing that the engineers at Multicollab are trying to tackle. So it got pushed back. When you are working with influencers and people who are going to talk about your product, what do you do when it gets pushed back, when your deadlines change?
I mean, are they waiting, or have they actually allocated time for this? Or are they still involved in the story of the development?
Yeah, I mean, it's still not, you know, this is fresh because we're still waiting for this actually to happen. And that's what I'm dealing with. I've given these influencer licenses out, and I've had to tell them it's almost ready. It's not quite. And so here's the question is, do I want someone to try something before it's polished and let them know, hey, I promise it's going to get better? Or do you wait until it's fully done? Now take a look at it.
Can you do an NDA with them?
Well, you can, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you're when someone has an opinion about something, you really only get one shot at them having that first impression.
So can you frame it though as being that you're after feedback from them to help you get the product perfectly right for it? And as a result, you're going to thank them once it comes out as part of the product and all this, you know?
And that's kind of the direction we've gone, except for they do have schedules, which they're planning on, you know, posting their videos and reviewing and taking it out.
Yeah.
It does add complexity. But
how serious are they with that schedule? They've got to keep to it.
Things get moved around, but as
it's
you
tech,
know,
isn't it? They're probably used to things being delayed. Yeah,
exactly. You do try to have a schedule, and things are based on that, and you have a roadmap with that schedule. So that has been one of the struggles and strategy with this client of when deadlines get moved back.
I think that's it, though. You know, it's like as a journalist, we got stuff through all the time that was embargoed. Mm. Now, in that particular case, we weren't working on it. We weren't testing it. But you look at, the one that immediately comes to mind is there's that game called Star Citizen, which is constantly, it's a game that's being developed all the time. It is buggy as heck. It's not been officially released, and yet it's one of the biggest games ever. And people are still buying into it. But they have these sort of early testers who have non-disclosure agreements where they're not allowed to release stuff, even on YouTube. But they still are able to get that sort of first access to it when it moves up to the next level, and then they can start putting out videos before anyone else can release it.
So the question is, should you delay your launch? Okay, let's say that your product is done October 15, and you can get your reviewers early access, but should you give them access, wait until October 15, and then wait until November 1st to actually release your product? What should be the encouragement to our clients? Like, hey, I know you're ready to get this thing out, but I'd like for you to keep it private, quiet for a couple more weeks while our testers, while all our media outlets have a chance to look at it first.
I mean, my personal feeling, and everyone watching the show is going to have their own feeling on it, is that with influencers like that, if they're interested in helping you develop that product and getting it right, then you make it clear that this is a test version. We want your final feedback so that we can get it right. Once it's ready to go, then you are going to have exclusive access to this for the first week, because every influencer wants to feel like they're important. The last thing you want to do with an influencer is release it to everyone. You know, you want those core people that you're trying to have on side. to allow them to create their content, put out the videos, whatever it is, so that they can feel like we had exclusive access. That helps to build up a bit of hype. And also then you've got that element as well, whereby if they then go and do, let's put it bluntly, if they go and do a negative review, they know they're not going to be invited next time.
Right.
And then once there's been that sort of week, 2 weeks of hype, but probably a week of hype. I mean, it depends how fast you know your sector better than I do. Then you start releasing it out to the public. You know, I mean, but by holding it back, by having that time where they get exclusive access, hopefully you're going to generate a more positive, the content they're going to put out is going to be more positive.
Right. Yeah. No, that, I think that that's,
I mean, the last thing you want to do though is, I mean, you know, I think everyone knows in tech now that a product is released and it is never going to be perfect at release. I mean, it's just, tech is just so much more complex than the old days of writing, you know, Space Defender on a ZX81 or on a little pocket home computer. You know, these things are so much more complex, but at the same time, it's still, you know, you don't want the binding narrative when you release something to be, this is buggy as hell, no one should use it.
Right.
So I think it's better to have that, ask for feedback from those influencers, give them a bit of exclusive time when it's nearly ready, and then release to the public. That would be my approach. I'd love to know what other people think as well.
Yeah. That first impression, can you get that back? How much do you want to protect the first impression?
Yeah.
How good is good enough?
Yeah.
So there's another part of this campaign that's been interesting. Are you familiar with the term Sherlocking? It's another Apple thing.
No.
So Apple took a product, and there was a product called Sherlock, and it was essentially Spotlight, which is now on the Mac, and they just baked it into their core operating system, basically just taking away this company, Sherlock, this third party who had added this functionality to Apple's software, and Apple Sherlocked them. Another example would be...
What does it do? What is it? I'm thinking of a guy with a big deerstalker hat from 18th century London.
When you go into your Mac and you do the Spotlight search, that same function, before that existed on the Mac, it was a third-party software called Sherlock.
Okay.
And so they have been Sherlocked. Another example, a more recent example, is that, remember iPhones you used to have, or any devices, there was a flashlight app where you could download an app to turn on the flash on your phone.
Yeah.
Well, now it's just baked into the operating system of Android and Apple. What did those third-party developers do? You know, they had built this business with, in the first case, with the Sherlock, or in the next case, with the flashlight. But this type of things happen. Yeah. So back to Multicollab. Mm. Multicollab is this collaborative piece of software. It's an add-on onto WordPress. Mm. What's interesting is that you have these roadmaps of the WordPress project, and they have said that collaborative editing is on the roadmap.
Yeah, I thought I thought I heard it. Yeah.
They're building a product which its main feature is to be able to edit, to have collaborative work done on a WordPress, on a WordPress website, and it's on the roadmap to be incorporated into the core piece of software. Mm-hmm.
So what do you do about it is a question. I mean, the immediate one I think of is like Dropbox compared to Google Drive.
Right.
You know, Dropbox came out first, didn't it? And it had file sharing between computers, and then Google Drive comes along. And yet Dropbox is still managing to sustain itself by targeting a specific niche audience, aren't they?
Right. So that's been my answer. So this morning, I got asked from a media outlet, hey, it's on Gutenberg 3, which is the WordPress roadmap. What is this going to do? I'm interested. I was like, oh, thank you for asking, because it gave us an opportunity. How we typically respond is that, just like Apple, and again, I go back to Apple because that's a good example, but they have a notes app, and it's a good notes app. They also have a weather app, and it's a pretty good weather app. Yet there are tons of third-party weather apps or notes apps. Your example of Dropbox is perfect. And what our responsibility for Multicollab will be to create the narrative is that the pro users, the people who want the extra features, they're using this specialty app. because yeah, you can get that functionality. You can get the weather on your iPhone, but if you're a snowboarder and you care about the weather specific on this, well, you need our special app or whatever
it is. It's coming up with a use case. You know, one of the things that I do with this particular podcast is that there are plenty of video editors out there, but you know, being a bit of a techie myself, what I did instead was I wrote a program whereby I just upload the video file, the raw video file that I have, and it does all the editing for me. Hmm. So it head tails it. I mean, it's like even creating the structure of this show today, I wrote a program whereby I simply enter details like your name and stuff like that, and it's automatically creating the captions on the screen. It's automatically creating the script and stuff like this, the things that I need to remember. Hmm. And it's that personalization by making something that a specific audience needs, by mm-hmm. making that more directed to them. There are always going to be niches. So if WordPress is coming out with this generalized collaborative tool, there's always mm-hmm. going to be more specific niche cases that you can create something, I think, which targets a particular group better. There would always mm-hmm. be a way of doing things better. It's the problem with video editors. They're generalized tools for every use case, whereas I want it to do what I want in the way I right. work. And right. I think that's why there's always an opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's that narrative. It's that story, as you say.
Yeah. And thank you for asking. I'm so glad you did. And you're almost setting people up in a positive way to ask that question. Because when you can help people, so in education, there's this idea of it's difficult to remember what it's like to not know something.
Yeah.
And so when we know our product so well, like, oh yeah, of course this is obvious, but you got to think about, oh, they've never heard this before. And you have to remember, they don't know. It's difficult to remember what it's like to not know something. And if you can have someone have one idea and you present the other idea and then they can close it to themselves and they do it for you, something happens in the brain, actually it does, where you are more memorable.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I could talk about this for hours. You know, having been around the WordPress community quite a bit, I think one of the problems is that you've got a lot of absolutely brilliant coders mm-hmm. who are not great communicators. Yep. And this is why people like you are so needed and why you have a job and why you're in so much demand. Because it's people like you that can communicate that hard tech that does mm-hmm. amazing things, but these people just can't get it across. Yeah. And you then go and translate that story. So it's,
And what I constantly tell our people we're talking to is that existing and being good isn't enough. Mm-hmm. It's just not enough. You can't just be good and exist. You have to tell a story that is going to solve a problem for somebody.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, gosh, we're just going to agree completely.
Every time.
Anyway, whatever your thoughts are, if you have thoughts on what Adam's doing as well, if you're involved in the tech world as well, I would love to know your thoughts too. Just head to thepublicrelationspodcast.com. You will find all the links on there. Don't forget also that if you want to get the newsletter, which is completely free, comes out weekly as well and includes some of my takeaways from each episode and updates about the show as well, you can get that by going to thepublicrelationspodcast.com/subscribe. Yes, all the links are at thepublicrelationspodcast.com. Also, you might have noticed as well, and I've talked about this before, that there is a project which is going to emerge eventually, once it's finally ready, called PRology.com. It's pr-ology.com that is something that I'm developing to go along in partnership with this show that hopefully is going to help me support this show and the production of the show as well. There's a waiting list to join that now, but if you go along to that website, you can join that if you would like to find out more when that is finally ready. Now, let's talk about AI for PRs. Now, if you use video or audio as part of your campaigns, let's face it, who doesn't these days? Then language has always been a bit of a barrier if you are trying to reach a global audience or into a particular niche where there is some kind of local language or dialect. Well, the translation tools have been around for a while, but AI is going to make it possible to record one video and not just dub it into another language, but to make you or your voiceover artist speak that other language. Now, in 2024, YouTube say they're going to be releasing a free tool to creators on the YouTube platform that will go way beyond text captions or dubbing because it will change the shape of your voice, of your mouth, and regenerate your voice in that language. So Adam and I could be speaking English, we could be speaking German, we could be speaking Hindi, we could be speaking Chinese. How good are you with languages, Adam?
So I went to school in England, right, for in college. So I did spend a year there, and I went there for the language program, and I am now fluent
in English. I still struggle with it, and I was born and lived for 50 years. I mean, the problem, of course, with the whole of this, I think, is going to be the accuracy. You know, I mean, maybe if you've got a disclaimer on there, if you're doing something which is to do with arts and crafts, you're going to be okay. But you're certainly not going to be wanting across something. Put something across it is really specific and finite, or may cause offense if it gets it wrong. You know, I was trying a platform called Speechify the other day, which takes your words, dubs it, and then translates into another language. And it was speaking back what I was saying in Japanese. But I mean, frankly, it might have well been swearing at me, for all I know. But it sounded convincing. So it's going to be an interesting tool, and I'm sure PRs are going to be able to take advantage of that next year. Would you use it? Do you think you would use it for your own campaigns, that auto-dubbing?
You know, I think the shift in work will flow just like you have no idea if the Japanese was accurate. What I would want to employ or help have someone help me with is, can you check this first? I don't need you to do all of the work. I'm not maybe hiring you to do my voiceover, but I'm hiring you to quality control.
And in that particular case, you could literally get anyone, couldn't you, that is just a native Japanese English speaker who could just check it.
Yep. That would be an ideal situation.
Yeah. Right. So this is the section of the show where we round up comments and questions and survey results normally, but being the first time that we're doing this in the new series, we've only got one question, but this is an opportunity also for your campaign updates as well. And if you would like to send in any of those, whatever you're up to at the moment, let us know what you're up to, what you're finding. You can get all the details through the newsletter and on the website, thepublicrelationspodcast.com. But as I say, because this is the first episode of this new format, normally what we do, Adam and I would discuss the points, but we have just one question here this week, which came in a while back on LinkedIn that I thought I would share as a good opportunity for this. The question was, I'm looking for tips on press releases. I'm giving reporters all the facts they need, so why are they not reacting? Okay, I mean, I think the first thing I would say is that it's hard to know quite without seeing the actual press release.
Sure.
But from what that question says, my immediate reaction is, okay, you said the word facts. So that's all well and good, but are you giving a story? Yeah, well, I mean, Adam said this a little bit earlier. I mean, that's my immediate thought, is how good is your story in here? Are you creating some kind of narrative that people are going to be interested in? I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Adam, but I just want to say, I was chatting to a friend of mine the other day who was over here, and she teaches journalism at one of the top journalism colleges in London. And she said that they do 4 hours of storytelling training every week with the journalism students, because it is that important. People need stories. They don't just want facts. So that's my thought coming off it. Adam, your thoughts?
So the first word that popped out was the word facts, which you quickly jumped on as well, is that facts are not enough. And I go back to my previous statement, is being good and existing isn't enough. You need to have a story. The other part that I would add to this is that, do you know the work of the reporter that you're sending this to? Are you spraying and praying that they pick it up? Or have you said, hey, I really appreciate the piece you did on this last week. You really hit it. This is something I think we like to do business. We like to work with people that are our friends, that we care about. And so I want to be clear on this. Don't fake it. Actually care about that reporter's work. And if you can't care about them, maybe you need to look at a different line of work, because that authenticness, that you need to have an authentic appreciation for the work that that reporter does and has done in the past, and you feel, and you need, and showing that appreciate genuinely, doesn't need to be a long one, but maybe a sentence and a half that addresses, yeah, I appreciate the work that you do. You're the person that I'm, because of that, you're the person that I'm going to with this.
Yeah, it's really interesting that it's, you know, I get a lot of people pitching to the show saying, can I come on the show? And a lot of them will begin with a line which just says, I love your show. By the way, here's a stock press release about my guest that I want to pitch to you. And it's like, and I remember a chap who reached out to me ages ago And it was straight away from the start. He didn't even pitch someone. His first email was asking me something about the show and something I'd done and what I thought about this thing. I was like, well, it was hard not to reply. It was like, you know, and then eventually we got into the conversation. He was telling me who he was working for. And it's like, oh, we should have them on. Yeah. You know, it's that kind of thing. And now I know that guy quite well.
Right.
So that's what develops the relationships and gets you coverage next time. And he's a PR.
Go slow to go fast.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Slow down and build a relationship first. Actually go back and watch their old shows. Look at their old pieces. And care about the person and then reach out and say something that you appreciate about them.
Yeah. Well, this is the first time we've done the community bag. As I say, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, for example, at Richard Midson, MIDSON, or on, I think you can see the links on the screen at the moment if you are watching this on YouTube. If you're listening, then just head to LinkedIn. You'll find that or go to the website, which I've mentioned several thousand times already. Let me thank Adam. It's been an absolutely amazing discussion. I think we've gone way longer than we originally planned to, but it is the first episode, so we're still trying to find the new format. So thank you so much. What are you up to next? What other campaigns are you working on? Anything?
You are so welcome. It has been an absolute pleasure. And again, an honor to be on for your first episode of this
season.
Thank you.
Thank you for being the guinea pig. Thank you.
I am working on Black Friday. Yes. Black Friday is coming up. If you are not ready for Black Friday, you are behind. Here's the interesting thing about tech in comparison to retail, say, where you've only got, you know, you've got those doorbusters. What we're working on is how do you create virtual doorbusters that are authentic? And what we're looking at doing is, hey, yes, it's 30% off, 40%, whatever it is that is going to be that eye-catching, but for the first 25 people or 50 or whatever it is, depending on the size of the company, we will give you an extra, you know, hour a month of onboarding or of customer support or something where it is true that you can't give unlimited amounts of that thing because you're giving of the people in the company. So that's kind of what we're working on right now is helping our clients work on Black Friday. What is their deal? And that's been fun.
How to get them busting down the door. I love that. Yeah. Gosh, we could talk about this for hours. Thank you so much again for coming on. I hope you will come on again and update us with future campaigns as well, because I'd love to have you on. I think there's so much more we could have spoken about as well.
Thank you.
Well, let me round up then. I mean, if you are running a campaign, just a couple of points I want to get across before we round up the show today. If you are running a campaign, let me know what you're up to and a little bit about it so I can give you a plug in the show. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, as I say, or via the website, thepublicrelationspodcast.com. If you'd like to be a guest host on the show and want to introduce yourself to everyone else, then head to the website as well. Click on the guest link there. As I said before, this show is not about lining up thought leaders, even though you might be one. I'm looking for unique perspectives. So, you know, whether you specialize in influencers or tech or whatever your speciality is, I want you on so we can discuss all the different issues and get your perspective on it as well. And finally, just a reminder as well that if you're interested in having a look at the Public Relations Podcast project, you will find that at PRology.com, PR-ology.com. And that, as I say, is just a waiting list at the moment. Hopefully we'll have the details for that soon. Whatever campaigns you are working on this week, have an absolutely awesome week. Let me know what you think about these stories this week and your campaign news as well. And I will chat next week. I'm trying to think who we've got next week. I've got a whole load of people lined up from right across the world, from America to Europe to Asia to the Far East. All that's still coming up over the next few months. And so I hope you're going to find lots of really interesting ideas and thoughts here. Have an awesome week. And I'll speak to you real soon.